You're listening to The God Journey, a place where people thinking outside the box of organized religion can share thoughts and conversation along the journey. Here are your hosts and fellow travelers, Wayne Jacobson and Brad Cummings.
Well, I'm Wayne Jacobson.
And I'm Brad Cummings.
And we want to welcome you to a special edition of The God Journey.
Where are we, Wayne?
Visalia, California. Most people, when they say it on TV, say Visalia.
Visalia.
Having lived here for 20 years, it's Visalia.
We're back in your stomping grounds.
We're back where I used to live, and we're here meeting with some Christian filmmakers. So we thought it'd be fun to turn the old podcast machine on and talk to some folks that have joined us for a discussion today about Christian filmmaking. How's that sound?
Who do we got here with us?
Well, from ChristianCinema.com, Bobby Downs. Hi, Bobby.
Hey, Wayne. Hey, Brad.
Hi, Bobby.
How are you doing, man?
I'm doing great. First of all, you said a bad word, which was Christian filmmaker.
Uh-oh.
That has a negative connotation to it.
You know, it does to me, too.
Yeah, it's filmmakers that are Christians. And try to say that when you introduce yourself. I'm a filmmaker that's Christian.
Oh, my gosh. That even sounds scary.
Yeah.
Because I would rather you just be a follower of Christ, maybe.
Exactly. So you're already getting into a discussion of definitions.
Oh, but we do that all the time here. We drive people nuts with terminology, don't we? Church, club, all kinds of wonderful things. Also joining us is Lauren Rosser. Lauren's from Sacramento, and he's heads up, like I say, is very carefully, because if you get it wrong, it doesn't sound good. Family Room Media. How's that, Lauren?
That's perfect. Good to be here, Brad and Wayne, and all the way here in downtown Visalia, all the outskirts of
Visalia. Yeah, we're way on the outskirts here.
Blame that in Bobby.
we're at the offices of ChristianCinema.com, which is not a Christian company, as I'm understanding things. It's a company of Christians. Is that right?
Exactly. There's no such thing as a Christian company.
I agree with you wholeheartedly, but that's a discussion for another day. So let's talk about the state of filmmaking in America, and particularly, I guess, maybe, Bobby, start with you. You distribute a lot of Christian films, some you love, some you just sell.
Oh, that's loaded.
That's very loaded. But
he's looking at me across the table with his eyebrows lifted, and it's like,
okay, explain this.
So, and you've produced movies as well as distribute movies, and where are we these days in this whole filmmaking thing as it applies here? A lot of movies out recently that garner a lot of talk among Christians. Christians are now an audience that Hollywood is actively cultivating on the heels of The Passion of the Christ and The Chronicles of Narnia, Lord of the Rings. What are your observations? What do you see happening?
Well, let me back up just a little bit. In 1999 is when we started, and that was about the time that the Left Behind series of books was coming out. And so we put our heads together and came up with a script for our own End Times movie, because it's a hot topic within the Christian bookstore market. And so if you're doing it from a business standpoint, that's the kind of movie you're going to make in hopes to get your investors their money back. And so we're talking about this as a business as well, and not just propaganda.
I see, propaganda.
So that's when it started in 1999, then did well on that film and did another movie called Mercy Streets and tried to release that theatrically across the country, and didn't have a very good distribution plan on that. And so
I was at the premiere of that, wasn't I? Downtown Los Angeles.
That's right, you were.
Yeah, even had my name in the credits. So
thanks for supporting us.
That was I was free, as I recall.
Anything free.
Anything free is good, yeah.
And so that's where we started ChristianCinema.com, was realizing that we needed a place to for filmmakers to gather to let people know that their movies existed.
And Brad, you also you're working with Promenade these days on some projects. So I mean, I know we've referred to them a couple times in the podcast,
yeah,
but we thought I'd bring you in more directly.
We're doing an episode, probably about five or six different epic Bible stories. We're starting off with the Ten Commandments. Noah is underway. And I think there's going to be some fantastic stuff. They're breaking some new ground in the animation realm. So, you know, I'm kind of excited with what's developing.
So. Good. And Lauren, back to you. What are you guys working on? You've got one movie in the can. You're working on a documentary. Tell us a little bit about those.
Yeah, I'm working with Bob Humphrey and David Fredrickson.
Two very dangerous guys,
yeah,
by
very,
the way.
Very much so.
We had David Fredrickson on an earlier podcast, if you missed that, some of the transition of a fellowship up in the Sacramento area.
Yeah, and the three of us have realized that But we really want to give people a voice through through video who've come out of the system, and we realize there's not a lot of resources as far as in the media in video or television, and that means to really give believers a voice in that area. So we've teamed up together. David has just finished his book. I forgot the name of his book. When the Church Leaves the Building.
And yeah, he's had about 10 titles on that thing now, but When the Church Leaves the Building, Dave, is that where we finally landed?
That's the one today.
That's the one today. So watch for it at your local Barnes & Noble bookstore.
So, yeah, we've teamed up to we're working on a documentary right now that's going to be four parts. The first part is dealing with the we're calling it the dropouts, dealing with the people who've dropped out of the system and what have
dropouts.
They found.
Dropouts, yeah, you're talking to a whole lot of dropouts.
That would be you, Wade.
What?
That'd be you, Wade.
No. I got thrown out. I'm not a dropout.
I got thrown out.
I guess I'm in the same boat as you guys. I'm a throwout. I'm not a dropout.
So why are you calling us dropouts?
I guess poor Tyler. David, you know, he'll come up with 10 more, I'm sure, and we'll find a settle on something.
And look for that at your local Barnes & Noble.
Exactly. So this one we'll be dealing with, you know, why have these people dropped out, and what have they found? Because the idea is usually if you drop out, you're going to dry up as a Christian. And then we're moving into the next one, looking at how did church get this way, looking at the history of it and leadership issues. And then moving from that into looking at what would church be like if church functioned as family as opposed to an institution. And then the last one, we're looking at where do we go from here? And that's focusing on more vision casting for people's lives of beyond just, are we in the box? Are we out of the box? That kind of thing. It's like, what are the dreams God put in you? What are the things God's put in you, the gifts, and to begin to step out and walk in what God's given you?
And that's still in production at this point, is that right?
Exactly. Yeah. I'd say we're 3/4 of the way done with the first one.
Are you going to bring out all four bits together or bring them out one at a time?
One at a time.
Okay, great. And you got a website where people can find out more about that?
Yeah, that's familyroommedia.com.
Which is not Family Remedia, which is kind of where we had some fun over lunch today, which is why this room's a little raucous at the moment.
That name hadn't even crossed our minds until Wayne was so courteous to point that out to us.
Well, and then you mentioned Slow Kids at Play, so that kind of just took it even further, I think.
Well, wisdom from a dropout, you know.
Well, Brad, from you, one of the things on the forum was, what kind of movies are you seeing today that you think make a good redemptive statement in the culture? That, and not necessarily, you know, movies aimed at Christians. I think a lot of the passion here is to talk beyond movies that just have a redemptive theme that invite people to think about God or think about parts of that journey without having an altar call and a Billy Graham sermon,
well,
I think.
I think picking up a little bit of what Bobby was talking about, you know, I think the whole idea of, you know, I'm a Christian filmmaker, when there is an agenda attached to it and there is that sense of I'm here to propagandize, I think people are turned off by that. I think the power of movies is the fact that it can ask questions. And I think what's so amazing about good filmmaking is it poses the right questions and invites people to think, and it leaves them in that place where it's like they have their curiosity piqued. I think what makes for boring television, boring films, is when everything's so trite and you can already guess what's coming. And I think that's sadly what a lot of the Christian attempts of old have been, is like people were too scared to kind of leave things open-ended. And I think, you know, when you look at how Jesus told stories and parables, he didn't tell things to make, you know, obscure things plainly clear. He kind of hid things. It made the hungry go and search for them. And I think that leaves people in a dialogue with the Holy Spirit. What I'm seeing in filmmaking today is there's a hunger for spiritual stuff. You know, when you look at the Passion of the Christ, it's like, okay, that was blatant, overt, that was there. But at the same time, it wasn't trying to convert you at the end. There wasn't an altar call. There wasn't someone getting up and saying,
and there were some complaints about that,
well,
though, weren't there?
Yeah, I mean, I do think
in fact, I think in a couple of theaters, some pastor guy went down front and invited people to come forward after.
I probably would have thrown my popcorn at him.
I never have any left at the end of the movie. To be honest, I didn't buy any at that movie.
Well, we're proud of you. That way.
There's just no way to eat popcorn and watch that whole experience.
Well, I think what you're seeing is there is a hunger For people when they go to movies, they want to be moved. They want to be touched. They are there. I do believe that it's where our culture gets a lot of its thought processes and its opinion shaped. I mean, I look at the movie theaters as the modern day sanctuaries in which our culture goes to kind of worship. I mean, they have their whole celebrity structure there. It's like what they look to for trends. And it's like,
Don't mean worship in the context of our previous podcast.
I don't. Yeah. But in the context of, you know, that's where people, they're looking, they're searching, they're wondering. For us to not be a part of the dialogue that happens there, I think it'd be an absolute mistake to have it a monologue. Because I don't think people like getting preached at. I think they like being talked with.
But isn't this pointing up, perhaps, Bobby, I'd really like to address this to you. Doesn't this point up some of the differences between what secular people may be looking for from a movie experience and then oftentimes what Christians are looking for? You did this film, Mercy Streets, or was it 99, 2000? And yet you found that you got some really negative reactions to that movie from Christians. Could you talk about that a minute? Because they're really not looking for this kind. They really prefer an altar call or an overt Christian message, yeah?
Yeah, in the first draft of the script, we had Bible verses and we had Jesus' name throughout the whole script, and we decided to tone it down and make it a little edgier as far as our agenda was concerned. And even then, it was too religious for the secular market, and it wasn't religious enough for the religious market, and so it fell into this big black cavernous void where nobody wanted the film. And so, you know, you've got we discovered at that point that there are definitely different tastes, even within the Christian community.
And we've been kidded coming in, but there's some movies you've done that have done well in, say, among the Christian marketplace that you don't necessarily think doesn't make the kind of points you'd want to make in a movie. Wouldn't that be true?
Definitely. If you want to make a good selling film for the Christian market, it's got to have an agenda. And so that's the bottom line.
And so the desire in finding some crossover appeal is because certain like Chronicles of Narnia, Lord of the Rings, some of those had a broader appeal, did they not?
Oh, definitely. And I think everybody appreciates it. And it was something that you and I were talking about earlier about when you present Jesus in the reality of him as a real person, no matter who you are, you're gonna melt when you meet the person of Jesus. And if we could communicate that as storytellers, the real person and the reality of Jesus and the reality of God, you're going to attract a lot of people. But for some reason, we as Christians aren't very good at doing that.
There's almost a glazing over. We've talked about whether it's prayer and a quote-unquote service or whatever. We end up really talking about Jesus sometimes like he's almost isn't there. Like it's more of an icon we're thinking about rather than a living presence among us. And I see the same thing in movies. If you can get down to presenting Jesus as a dynamic presence among us, what movies would you say have done that well, Bobby or Lauren?
Well, we were talking earlier about The Matrix, how that touches
that
you.
Wasn't made by Christians at all.
That's right.
Unfortunately. Yeah. Well, tell me about it. I mean, what did you? I think we all like The Matrix here. Would I be safe in saying that?
Yes.
Yeah, it was an R-rated movie.
Oh,
and
It was. I didn't even know.
I watched the G-rated version, sanitized through. No, sorry, I didn't.
I think it's more of the choices, red pill, blue pill, reality, walking through that and taking the risk of walking into what is real rather than hanging on to what is your illusions about life.
Definitely. And I shared a bit of that story at an audience where I was telling, I was speaking at a conference. I'm telling you what, half the people labeled me a demon from hell just because I used an illustration, and Christians aren't used to thinking, at least this pocket of them, weren't used to thinking about entertainment outside of, you know, a specific Christian message. These are people that, you know, put in some Buddhism, put in some Hinduism, put in a whole lot of mix to create this Matrix mythology. But, I mean, I think they captured some real truth. Obviously better in that movie than the sequels, which were horrible. But that movie really captured an idea of what it is to live in an illusion instead of the reality. I think did it incredibly well.
Yeah, and it's just a compelling story. I think the sad reality is a lot of times it's like I almost wonder if it's not because of jealousy that the Christian community has somewhat demonized the media. I think to some degree we're jealous of the influence, the power, and all this other stuff that they have, and we'd like it for ourselves. And so there's that sense of an agenda that we're going to take this back and use it for God, you know. And it's like, I don't think that's ever going to be effective. I think there's been storytelling down through the ages, well before they had visual media to present it. That's how truth has been communicated. And so, you know, something that I felt like the Lord said to me is that, you know, this next generation is going to be won by the storytellers. And that's where my heart began to realize, it's like, gosh, even our preaching, so much of it is propositional, presentation of principles and doctrine. And yet what moves us are the real life stories. That's where we live and breathe. And I think the power of film, what makes it compelling is the fact that I can see myself in that mix. I'm not watching something from a distance, but I'm drawn in. I mean, the most compelling thing about The Matrix was, yes, it dabbled in spirituality. It was not Christian. It wasn't produced by Christians. I think they had an intentional message of asking a question is, what world are you living in? Are you in the desert of the real or are you in this illusion? And what a great question to ask humanity. So why be against that? You mean, I think the Holy Spirit can use something like that. Did he inspire it? I don't think so. But can he use it? Absolutely. And I think that's where the open-handed, the big-hearted capacity of just going like, God's interested in our culture. And he doesn't, I don't think, look down at planet Earth and go like, well, these are mine and those aren't, you know, and let's burn those. I think he's going like, these are all children I profoundly love. Some who know me and others who don't know me yet. And I think in trying to communicate, if we can get over the us versus them, I think we'll get a whole lot farther along the way in actually communicating.
Yeah, I think what's interesting is I was thinking about a friend of mine who his son is a musician, and he was telling his son was saying, "Dad, I want to write a Christian song. I want to write a Christian song." And he kept trying to come up with a Christian song. And his dad said, "Well, you know, Christ is in you. So stop trying to write a Christian song and just write a song." And that's how I believe as a follower of Christ, that when Christ is in our lives, he's just there. He's living in me. And so as I just live at being who I am, I don't have to try to do something Christian. He will just be expressed through the arts or through the talents that he's given me. And I see that the same thing being applied with filmmaking, is rather than trying to do something Christian, just do what God's given you to do, what he's put in your heart, and it will express him.
Wayne, you talked to the question you had about the differences and what people like within the Christian community. And I think what Christians really want to see, at least the market that we've found, is they want to see their faith lived out on the screen. And so sort of like a tattoo, you know, they want to see this thing that represents them. And so that affirms them, whatever they happen to believe. And so if it's preaching at you, then, and that affirms their faith and they feel good about it. And especially if a celebrity is the vehicle through which their faith is shown out on the screen, then they love that. And that's why this market is, it's kind of shallow, really.
And that's why, really, some of the movies that would point that out, say the movie Saved that came out a couple of years ago about some high school kids and one's ostensibly a Christian. It's a real movie about...
I loved it.
I did, too. I thought it was a fabulous movie. But it got really panned in some segments of the Christian community because they felt like it was making fun of Christians when it was really making fun of hypocrisy. But some Christians so identified with this plastic exterior message that they were offended by the movie when this one young student makes some real transitions in her life by getting real. But I think that points up kind of the problem. If again, the agenda, maybe the agenda of the filmmaker or maybe the agenda of the audience goer, I want to feel validated by this thing. I don't want to necessarily come away with good questions. But if you don't come away with good questions, I think the movie experience is flat except for the home crowd. You know, if it preaches to the choir, then yeah, they love it. But I think that's a good example of something that works for the world to say, wow, yeah, that leads to some questions. And the Christian community saying, no, it's just making fun of us and we don't like it. And I think there's that kind of edge that we feel like Hollywood's always making fun of us rather than putting up a mirror and pointing out some of the things that might help us ask some good questions ourselves.
Another interesting thing about that film is it didn't have a Christian in the lead part. And I think she was a music person, a musician or an artist.
Yeah, I don't remember.
And so they would have a problem with that as well, this Christian marketplace, because we did a survey at ChristianCinema.com where we asked people, do you believe that the actors in a Christian movie should be Christian? And 90% of the people believe that 100% of the actors in a movie should be Christian. if it's going to be a Christian movie. And so they'll have a problem with who you cast in these certain roles as well. So that's what we're dealing with.
Well, you see that racially, too, just in the world. There's a recent movie where they put a Chinese girl instead of a Japanese girl in the Japanese role. And there was a whole brouhaha over that, too. So I think people just like to complain over all kinds of things. Another movie that was, again, points out some different. Bruce Almighty, written by a Christian person. I think mm-hmm. you told me that, Bobby. Is that right?
Mm-hmm. That's correct.
Written by a Christian guy. But some, again, because they got this guy who's kind of given God's assignment over a period of days and totally messes it up. I mean, they perceived it as so sacrilegious, some groups, that they missed. I think that's just a wonderful...
Oh, gosh, it was funny.
...comedic presentation that makes you really ask some, really, who God is and who are we in God's world. I thought it was incredibly well done, incredibly funny, but again, panned because it was blasphemous, or so many people thought.
I just don't think God is as uptight as we are about it, and I think a lot of times... Hollywood has poked at the Christian community. I think they have made fun of our faith. And so I do think that there is a little bit of a defensiveness perhaps in the Christian community that's wanting to say, I just want to see us up there, and if we're represented, then we got to go support it whether it's really good or not. And I think, you know, it's a little bit of, you know, the fans in a stadium cheering, you know, we got spirit. Yes, we do. We got spirit. How about you? As if that's going to affect the outcome of the game. It's like the two different sides cheering, and who can get the loudest cheer? And you're just going like, excuse me, none of you are wearing the jersey. None of you are actually scoring any points or affecting the outcome here. The reality is what's going down on the field. And I think a little bit of our commentary surrounding, you know, filmmaking is it's, you know, if the Christians feel like, oh, this one's for the home team, we're going to go run and support it. And it's like, is this good? What's it saying? What's effect does it have, not just on we who know the insider language, but does this even effectually communicate to those who don't know our special Christianese? And I think a lot of times we don't really ask those important questions. But we're just wanting to say, you know, we got spirit, yes. I kind of laugh.
Let me just say, I think you're going to see a wave of Christian movies come out, just like a few years ago when the Hillsong worship, you know, phenomenon happened, right? And then you started seeing Michael W. Smith do a worship album, Third Day do a worship album. You're going to start seeing mainstream institutions get behind filmmakers that can make movies that represent their faith on the screen. And so don't be disillusioned about that. It's not like, oh, great, there's this new thing coming. All they're doing is they're doing the same thing with film that they did with worship. And you got Baptist churches raising their hands and worshiping in the style of a charismatic, but yet it's just because everybody's doing it. The content, the concept is the same, but really, is the heart any different? And that's, I think, what you're just saying, Brad, is the heart has got to really be different for it to be true.
For it to make some kind of effect. I know Bruce Almighty, the two scenes in that movie that I really captured me. One is God is a black janitor. And the comment, if you're God, you're always cleaning things up, which I thought was extraordinary, because I think God definitely, he's got the cleaning up thing down. He does that really well. The other thing, I thought the Jennifer Aniston prayer toward the end of that, she's sitting on her bed, her character. To be honest, this is the first time in a movie where I thought somebody was praying, and it wasn't plastic. It was just a real heart. What are you talking about? A real Jesus. And Bruce Almighty, too. I don't want necessarily my answer in this. I just want her to have what's best. I think that communicates some things about prayer. I've never seen anything close to come to that in a quote-unquote Christian movie. When somebody prays in a quote-unquote Christian movie, it gets real plastic. And dear God, this and that, and in Jesus' name, amen. But that's how we live it, so that's often how we portray it, unfortunately. And it keeps it from being just a part of our life.
I think anything that is genuinely true is something that God can inhabit and use. I mean, I think that's why, you know, some of the most moving films that have impacted me weren't because they were necessarily, quote, Christian or even had some sort of gospel-oriented message. It's because an element in that movie was true, and the Holy Spirit kind of breathed on it for me, says, you know what, I'm applying that to your life right now and here, and that's what impacted me. And I think that, you know, I look at what God's able to use, And I just go like, God can ride into any town on any available donkey. It wasn't a holy donkey. It was an available donkey. And it's like, you know, it's like, let him inhabit whatever works.
Yeah, one of the movies I'm sitting here thinking of that really impacted me was Les Miserables with Liam Neeson and Jeffrey Rush. And the reason that movie really hit me was it was such a comparison of grace versus the law. You had one character in the movie, Jean Valjean, who was just like, just grace, grace, grace. And then the other character who was a police officer who was Javert was his name, who just represented the law to the core. And there's even a line in the movie where he says, I have lived my life without breaking a single rule. And which of those characters was the most miserable? It was the police officer who lived his life without breaking a single rule. And I don't want to give away the movie because the ending is so profound because it exactly shows where the law takes you, where living your life by rigid rules and regulations takes you, where you have Liam Neeson, who is a very flawed man and made a lot of mistakes and a lot of failures, but yet his heart was right. And you see how he didn't live with this heavy burden on his back other than that he was being pursued by the law all his life. And just how in our own lives, how the very thing that often just brings such agony to us is being pursued by the law, that sense of guilt, that sense of that we always have to measure up or accomplish something, and that if we break one rule, you know, it's to prison with you.
Bobby, you guys were just part of The Visitation, right? Your group helped do that. Hey, how's that movie doing? What do you guys... I guess it's in video now, isn't it?
Yeah, it sort of had a theatrical release January 20th nationwide, and it kind of got botched, but it's coming
out
on...
That's a Frank Peretti novel.
Frank Peretti novel, and it's kind of a... they try to bill it as a kind of a horror, Christian horror flick. You know?
Hey!
Oh, there you go! that's like Christian filmmaking again. We're back to that, probably.
And Scott Derrickson was one of the co-producers on it, and he wrote and directed Exorcism of Emily Rose. You might be familiar with that one.
I haven't seen it yet, but I'd like to understand it's got some real interest in it. Have you seen it?
I haven't seen it.
Yeah, I haven't either. We're with Bobby Downs, ChristianCinema.com, and Lauren Rosser from Family Room Media in Sacramento. We're in Visalia, California, just having a chance to talk about some movies. So what's out there now that you think is worth seeing for people? Anybody?
It's dead quiet.
It's February. I find that February tends not to be the great time of the year to go to the theater.
Okay, well, you were saying Hoodwinked earlier was something that
Hoodwinked
captured
is good.
You.
Another good film, can I mention it? My Date with Drew.
You can mention
it. You can shameless promote anything, Bobby.
Bobby was a little involved in that, and it's now out in video release.
Best film ever.
But it wasn't his date with Drew. It was somebody else's date, right, Bobby? It wasn't yours.
No, but it's like a docudrama, and it's well worth renting.
So there's not much out there right now that's exciting us.
Well, I just remembered, thanks to my friend Bob Humphrey sitting over here at the table, that one of our favorite movies that's on DVD now is Cinderella Man. And we love that movie because the reality in the characters there, if you've ever gone through a real struggle in your life, especially dealing with finances and stuff, just the raw reality of the struggle in that family and that movie to me was so overlooked at the Oscars. I was all ticked, you know, when I saw that Russell Crowe and Renee Zellweger didn't get any attention because the acting in that movie was just phenomenal.
Cool. What else maybe, Brad, nothing out there exciting you at the moment, huh?
No, the truth is I've had the privilege of being on the Screen Actors Guild nominating committee, and so I got all the movies sent to me at home, and so I've been actually pouring through a whole bunch of them. And I'll be honest, you know, there aren't a lot that are just compelling. I mean, you know, a great film that just, you know, to me is top 10 of the ages. So a film like The Gladiator, we haven't had a lot of hero epics of recent date that, you know, really move you. I enjoyed Cinderella Man. I watched Munich, and you know, for a lot of people, it's like, you know, look, the content matter of that alone is going to be a little struggle. But I love the struggle in that. I love the dealing with the fact that, gosh, you know, revenge is not very satisfying. And the whole struggle that there is not an effective answer to some of these problems and allowing that to just completely obvious. I look at a film like that and go like, you know, who knows how it's going to do in the awards. But it's a film worth seeing. It's a film worth wrestling with in terms of the issues that are there. You know, I love entertaining films, but I don't always want to sit down and be entertained. You know, we got King Kong at home, and it's like, well, that's fun watching. You know, it's great. But it's not like, ooh, that one changed my life. It's like, that just was a story.
And no, no other movies, past movies. I think one of the movies I really enjoyed came out the same time that The Matrix did and pretty much got blown out by it, and that was the movie Instinct with Cuba Gooding Jr. and Anthony Hopkins. And it, particularly the out of the boxers that we have listening to this kind of podcast.
Must view.
Oh, the whole idea about us being in control of our lives. And there's a couple of wonderful lines in that movie. I love when he's among the apes at one point and he says, I was no longer with them. I was among them. And this big alpha male had gone around and kind of contained him inside that herd or flock. What are apes anyway? Did anybody have any idea? I think that movie to me, even though not a movie aimed at Christians, maybe not even written for, but I think gets to some ultimate truths and considerations that most movies don't.
What I really love in a film is, I mean, I'm a little odd. I usually watch films and, you know, I'll be a little weird and mystical at the moment. I sit down and I watch them with Jesus. I go, Lord, is there anything in this that is of redemptive value that you want to highlight that can impact me? Because I'm curious and I want to listen for the voice of my shepherd. Do I think Jesus was making the films? No, I know the names on the credits. Those people were involved. But it's been fun to be able to kind of just develop my ear to hear. You know, I think one of the things that's in, you know, most often repeated phrase in the book of Revelation is, to him who has ears to hear, let him hear. And I go and I sit and I watch movies, and that's my little language. I love the language of film. I love visual stuff. That is a language I understand. It's a medium through which I think God speaks to me. Is it the Bible? Not at all. You know, I'm not trying to quote movies or, you know, like, you know, the first scene, you know, second act, you know, it's more like they're just stories, but God can use them if we allow him.
And does it all have to be truth to enjoy seeing truth reflected in bits of it? And I think overall, the Christian community has not been great at saying, here's something that's entirely secular, yet it exposes questions or it illustrates things about God that are true and something you can grab hold of, even if the whole thing doesn't have the agenda that you want. And I think, as we've said earlier, having an agenda coming to a movie ruins the experience to start with, either if you're making it or watching it.
I was going to say there's some inconsistencies in the Christian community, because with Christian music...
You're kidding.
Yeah.
Gee, Bobby, we don't allow that kind of talk here, dude.
Say that again.
Yes. There's some inconsistencies. The interesting thing is, like, with Christian music, the top, you know, 50 that are played over the air, does every single one of those top 50 have the name of Jesus in all of those songs?
And I hope so.
Well, there you go.
Brad's one of those.
Yeah. Just big problem.
No wonder he's working on the Ten Commandments.
Yeah.
Eh?
That's right.
Yeah, I'm old covenant guy.
I'm not sure Jesus is in there either.
So getting the Christian community to appreciate films that share the attributes of God and his nature and relationship with him, getting the Christian community to appreciate that is one of the challenges right now.
And maybe you think part of that might be contributed by the fact that when movies first came out, it was perceived to be a Hollywood worldly kind of thing. Christian community, by and large, stayed out of that forum for a good many years. So it's almost like we're having to catch up if we're going to use that forum or use that medium in an effective way, or, you know, tell good stories. I mean, that's where storytelling is now. Before, it was the guy who could do it around the campfire, you know. Now,
and here's another interesting thing is there are a lot of Christians in Hollywood. I mean, we meet them all the time. Our crews are made up of people out of Hollywood, and a good percentage of them are Christian. So there are Christians working in Hollywood, but they're not Christian filmmakers. And so you've got a problem because we define Christian films as you have to be a Christian filmmaker, then the guys in Hollywood that are Christians working on films aren't Christian filmmakers, even though they're a part of that cultural dialogue that's happening and they're influencing, impacting these scripts that are made. So how are we going to flesh this out to determine who does what and whose hands are in what?
Yeah, it's going to be impossible to do, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. You know, one of the most important things I learned early on, I was a little goofy when I was first pastoring. I remember going...
Oh, I'm glad you got over that.
And I'm no longer goofy, you know. But I remember, my wife was a high school teacher. We went to a play down at Santa Monica High School. And, you know, I've seen...
Was Chipper there?
No, this is pre-Chipper era. But we did have two dogs named Moses and Elijah.
Would you get on with it?
And so I'm watching The Wizard of Oz, and I'm in this kind of like, you know, serious driven mode of, you know, we got to be about advancing the kingdom, and I'm looking at this whole play and all the energy expended, and I'm just going like, you know, how is this important? You know, how is this going to change any lives? And you know, and I'm just having a very weird, bizarre kind of angst about being at this play, going like, you know, and how is this going to make a difference? You know, we should be out feeding the homeless or doing something. And in the midst of it, all of a sudden, the entire cast begins the song, you know, Somewhere Over the Rainbow. And they sing this as just this complete ensemble at the end. And I distinctly started to just tear up. This thing was moving me deep. And I felt like God was answering what was more just my complaint than a real question. It was like, God, does this even matter to you? And I felt like he was saying, yeah, Brad, it absolutely does. Can you not hear the longing in a generation that is saying there's got to be something more than just this? There's got to be a place where we would dare to dream dreams that really do come true. And I got to tell you, that was a life-changing moment for me, because all of a sudden I realized something that I was deeming not spiritual was, from God's perspective, profoundly spiritual. I just didn't have the eyes to see it. And thankfully, at that moment, I did have the ears to hear it, and it changed what I thought. And so, you know, when I look at this stuff, it's like, man, God's out there in love with humanity. And whatever they're focused on, I think he wants to climb in and try to inhabit if there's a way for him to do that. Because he wants to communicate to us.
Yeah, I was just thinking about while you're saying that, about that movie Beauty and the Beast. Of how that, when I saw that movie, it's just this Disney animated movie. And it touched something so deep within me while I'm sitting there watching. I left just like this, you know, old softy, you know, coming out of the theater with my wife, all blubbery and everything. And it's like, what's wrong with me? And the whole thing of just this woman loving this beast until he became human again. And just that touched something deep within me. And even that, the song from the movie, you know, Beauty and the Beast, it really hit something in me. And I think that's something that the media has the power to do, is it goes past our guards and it can really hit those longings in our heart. And I find that often, I think it was even said earlier, that the best way to convey a message is not to just put it out there and say, blah, here it is, and spell it all out. It's to make people ask questions. Jesus would do that. He would ask questions so people would walk away searching for the answer, and it draws people closer to him.
Yeah, I think that at times the church has been guilty of being like a used car salesman. We're trying to sell something, and the world is realizing you are trying to sell something. And
right.
I'm not sure I really want to buy that. You're not inviting me to a someone. You're trying to sell something.
And people feel exploited by that.
Yeah, they
which
do.
I think is why this whole thing crashes the way it does. And I'm amazed at how much I travel around these days, around the world, and find young people who are really feeling drawn into the movie industry at production levels, at creative writing levels. Even though one young lady from Ireland who wants to score movies, and according to her professors, has an incredible gift and that kind of thing. So it'll be interesting to see what comes of this down the road. If we can kind of think not so much of movies as propaganda tools or perceiving them that way, but really telling honest stories that help expose God to a culture just in the reality of everyday life.
But you know what? I also think there's something valuable that the church kind of disses at times. There's sometimes just the value of something that's entertaining. That I don't think is evil or wrong. And yet somehow we have polarized that as if, oh no, you know, that's wrong. You don't want to be entertained. I'm just going like, look, how many people out there are just struggling through a tough day? And to be able to have something to laugh at, something that for just a few moments lifts them out of their challenging
existence. Lightens the journey. Yeah.
And enables them to sort of just step into another world. I look at that as an incredible gift. Can it be misused? Can it end in a wrong direction? Sure. But in and of itself, it can be wonderful. I mean, you look at a sunset and you go like, well, what's the meaning of that? Oh, I don't know. I just think it's beautiful. You know? So, I'm a little weird.
A little bit weird. Well, Bobby, thanks for joining us today. And Lauren, that's Bobby Downs from ChristianCinema.com, and that's the web address if you want to check them out. And Lauren Rosser from Sacramento, and the website there again was?
Family Room Media.
I'm glad you... .com?
.com.
Well said, Lauren.
Okay. And I'm sure a discussion we'll have down the road, because I think we're going to keep an eye on media and see where we can sort out some things that are wonderful about it for us.
Awesome.
Thanks for traveling with us today on The God Journey. If you'd like to join the conversation, we'd appreciate your questions or feedback by email or at our blog at thegodjourney.com. Or you can call 24 hours a day to our comment line at 805-626-4212.